In many ways, the history of farming in Illinois is about its future, how we went from hand tools and horses to self-driving tractors and $10,000 an acre farmland. Retired Extension Director and ISU Professor Don Meyer will dive into 200 years of ag history in the Great Corn Belt later this month during a Bicentennial Speaker Series talk in Springfield. Meyer carves up Illinois farm history into four distinct areas, separated by seismic shifts in technology and world events. We're in the modern era now, he says, and GLT's Ryan Denham asked Meyer what the next era, the fifth era, might look like.
I think so, and I think, of course, technology is going to drive that. I mean, I can't envision where we're headed to. If you would have told me 20 years ago what we'd be doing with technology today, I think the fact that we have driverless cars, we already have driverless tractors. Even today, most of the time, the tractors do have farmers in them or farm help in them, but the tractors are self-guiding using satellite technologies. We're doing prescription weed control. If there's no weed, we don't need to spray. If the machine can find a weed, it can spray it. We keep track of records of where we have problems with disease, and we only need to treat those spots. We're putting our fertilizer on. We're replacing the fertilizer that the crops are using. We're putting it on where the yields are the greatest. That's where the greatest amount of fertilizer gets put back for next year's crop. So I think we're just really at the infancy stage of that. Most farmers today are not happy with a 200-bushel corn crop. They're looking to, in the very near future, that 300 bushels will be the new norm. As we did our history project, we found records of there was a 50-bushel challenge club challenging farmers to try to get 50 bushels per acre. In the 1950s, that was a 100-bushel club. And certainly now, if we had a club, it would be the 300-bushel club.
What do you think that we can learn about ourselves by looking back in this way?
I think it's a continual balancing. You know, the overall theme of 200 years, as I would say, looking back in time, is replacing labor with technology, whether that be simply hand tools with machines, whether that's being replacing labor with electricity. We've always been replacing labor. However, that's been sort of a jobs program because that labor, you know, today's tractors, the average farmer can't just tear into a tractor and overhaul it like we used to even when I was growing up. Today, everything is technology-based, and those are jobs, and those are specialized jobs. And I think the demand for the support for the farmer, we talk about the average farmer in the country. A lot of times you read the statistic that a farmer feeds himself or herself and 150 or 60 people. Really, when you look at the support network that the average farmer has to have to operate a farm, it involves a lot of people. We say typically about 20% of the jobs are somehow related to agriculture across the country. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be the continual change. Right now, we're kind of also in the era of what I call capitalization, where it takes a lot of money to get into farming. I just couldn't quit my day job and say, I'm going to go out and rent some land. First of all, the land is very competitive to even find. Most of our farmers don't own their land. They rent their land because of the cost of the land. But additionally, on top of that, the average farmer probably has between $1 and $2 million worth of equipment. So when I'm teaching students here at ISU in agriculture, you know, you think of college debt as being a burden when you graduate from college, but think about college debt plus trying to buy the equipment that you need to get into farming. That's probably the biggest challenge we have ahead of us is who can afford to get into farming with the way it's structured today. And I think a lot of folks are looking at that saying, what can be done? We don't necessarily want to go back to the old days of farming everything by hand, but that is a barrier right now to getting young people involved in farming.
My understanding is that Illinois ranks third nationally in the export of ag commodities, with about $8 billion worth of goods shipped off to other countries. In light of the recent trade disputes involving American farmers, I want to ask, when did international markets really open up to Illinois farmers for the first time? Or was it there kind of from the beginning?
I think it actually was there kind of from the beginning. Once we got the trains to arrive, we could basically take care of getting our excess commodities onto a train. And of course, we went into the trucking era. And of course, today with Illinois being, and I always try to challenge my students, you know, Illinois is a large export state because we're on a coast. And those that are busy writing down the answers don't really listen to me because we aren't on a coast. But it's because we have the Mississippi River and the Illinois River and just a tremendous amount of grain that goes down the river in barges. And we really have been a world supplier for a long time. You know, as we looked at the history, as farmers adopted seed corn from 1900 to 1930, the Funk family here in town was a big part of the seed industry. The Funks were involved in selling seed to Europe back in the early 1900s. And so we have been connected to the world for probably 100 years or more. And so that's not new. And certainly the more recent developments have impacted especially soybeans, which is one of our main lines here in Illinois.
There has been a lot of discussion right now about the Trump administration's trade policies and retaliatory actions by other countries. In the history of Illinois agriculture, though, where does this moment kind of fit in? Have there been others like it where there has been this level of uncertainty on prices, on trade involving farmers?
Yes, there have. I grew up in the 60s as a young person growing up. We had grain stored in almost every small town. In fact, the government built bins. They actually owned what we called a bin site, and there might have been 100 small bins. And the government was essentially taking the grain from the farmers because there was no market. There just wasn't an incentive to get that grain. We actually just ended up wasting some of that grain. A lot of humanitarian programs like Food for Peace, I think it's Public Law 480, came into play in that period of time in the Kennedy administration and the Johnson administration, and we were actually giving away the grain because it really had no value here and was going to spoil. Of course, the challenge is when you give away grain is it sometimes puts other farmers in other parts of the world out of business, and their network collapses as well. So you have to, everything, just like everything else in war and peace, you have to be delicately handling this. And right now, we're in a pivotal time with exploring what does this really mean. Most farmers would rather trade than rely on government. I know that one of the solutions right now is a government payout of some kind, but generally those aren't the long-term fix. The free trade has been really good for the farm economy overall.
That's Don Meyer, a staple in McLean County Agriculture, a former extension director, now teaching at Illinois State University. We'll talk about the history of farming in the Great Corn Belt during a bicentennial speaker series talk Sunday, August 19th, at the Illinois State Museum in Springfield. It's also the last day for the Illinois State Fair. I'm Ryan Denham.
And this is Sound Ideas on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.